You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN on this Thursday afternoon as we continue to deal with the fallout and follow the Adam Toledo police video. On the phone line now is Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Congressman, welcome back to WGN.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, you know, we're sitting here. It's a very sad day, Congressman. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the video or are familiar with it, but the police, COPA, has released the police video of the shooting of this 13-year-old boy, and it's heart-wrenching for everyone involved. Have you been following this story?
No, I haven't. I saw that it was released. I haven't seen it yet. It's a tragedy, I know. And look, I don't know. We need to have, you know, a lot of times politicians will say we need to have conversations, way to punt. But I think, you know, as a country, everybody needs to take a deep breath and figure out, you know, what we're doing wrong at all levels, what we're doing right, and just, you know, and just have that, I guess. I don't know.
What's the role of the federal government in that?
Well, you know, it depends. When it comes to things like, you know, training and stuff, there can be a role in funding. Most of it's, of course, you know, local and state. But, you know, I think one of the things we need to do is make sure that we're recruiting, you know, the best police officers, that people understand, you know, how to react when you find yourself talking to or confronted with the police, that we, you know, continue to recruit the best people, train them, spend the money, and, you know, I don't know. It's I wish I had the answers. If I did,
You know, in some cases there just aren't. I mean, in this case, this officer, and it's a difficult thing because parts of the video that are posted are, you know, it's incredibly painful and graphic, and it's not going to be shown on TV. But and those same scenes are the officer leaning over this boy, doing everything he can after the shooting to try to revive him. I mean, it was like the cop show: "Stay with me, man. Stay with me, man." So
Yeah, I mean, it's tragedy all around, and, you know, for officers, you make decisions in a second, you know, that most of us never are in those situations, and I think that's where repetition and training is always the best.
Yeah, okay. We're going to continue to follow the story and stay on it. I want to ask you about a couple of other things. The Secretary of State made a surprise trip to Afghanistan after the President announced that he would remove all troops from that country by September 11th, 2021. Of course, the 20th anniversary of the terror attacks. You didn't like that idea. Tell me why.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I particularly am offended by the idea that it's going to be on September 11th. I don't understand how a withdrawal from Afghanistan and allowing the Taliban to resurge, which nobody doubts, is somehow an honor to the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We can disagree on what we should do in Afghanistan. That's fine. I don't understand the symbolism. I don't know why that is good. But on the broader picture, I think most people need to understand, you know, there's still this impression that we have, you know, 50,000 troops there heavily engaged in combat. We don't. Our troops that are there are doing advising and training missions. They are doing counterterrorism to an extent. So that's like actually going after Al-Qaeda and ISIS, which we know that we need to have an enduring ability to do. We can't do that without those troops there. And, you know, the other thing is, look, we can get to a point where we can leave when the Afghan government can defend itself. It's going to take a long time, but I know what's going to happen when we leave, which is it will collapse just like in Iraq, and we will be back. And that's what is a big concern to me. I know the decision's made. I certainly hope that it's the right decision. I hope the president's right, but I fear he's not.
Well, Congressman, it's been 20 years. When is Afghanistan going to be ready?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question. I think, you know, look, we don't know exactly when it's going to be ready. It's a battle. But if you think about this, Kosovo is a decent example, I think somewhat similar to Afghanistan, whereas we have an enduring peacekeeping presence. There's 3,500 peacekeepers in Kosovo, and we know that if we leave that there's a huge chance that would fall apart. It's kind of the same situation in Afghanistan, of course, you know, different on some levels, but you think about this, too. The Afghan people are doing 96% of the fighting. You know, they're losing 50 people a day in that war against the Taliban. And that is, they want to keep fighting them, and they want us in Afghanistan. You know, 85% of the Afghan people want the U.S. and NATO to stay. So we're not an occupying power like Russia tried to be. You know, we actually are a partner. So,
but even
like I said,
in your
I hope it's
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, even in your editorial that you wrote yesterday, you point out that the violence is growing there. I mean, the risk to troops...
It is. And I think, you know, the bottom line is, I personally think we made a mistake when we went down to 5,000 troops. I think it should have been, you know, slightly higher. We could have had more combat operations to keep the Taliban on its toes. And we made a mistake when we went forward. We have to negotiate. But when we went forward and signed an agreement with the Taliban that I think had no incentive for them to stop their combat operations only against us, not the Afghan government, they knew that what we would do, which was eventually we'd leave anyway. You know, they have that old saying, America has the watches, but we have the time. And on a broader thing, I just think at a time when Russia's got 100,000 troops on the border of Ukraine, China's growing, we're trying to renegotiate the nuclear deal with Iran, this is not sending a message of that we should be sending at this moment.
Do you like the idea of renegotiating the nuclear deal with Iran?
It depends, yeah. I like the idea of it if we renegotiate it without relieving the sanctions and if we have much more verifiability. We know, for instance, that the IAEA, the Atomic Energy Agency, found more information that Iran was basically cheating when they were in the nuclear deal, that they were hiding a lot of that program. So that has to be verifiable. And also, we need to have sanctions on ballistic missiles, which is only so that that could deliver a nuclear missile, and also some on their behavior in the region. But I do believe, you know, negotiation's important, but we negotiate from strength, not weakness.
All right, let's go to Russia. You brought up Russia earlier. The president announced sanctions against Russia today before the SolarWinds cyber attack that attacked, U.S. facilities, right? It was U.S. computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, which you like the sanctions,
mm-hmm.
but you want more.
Yeah, so here's the deal. This SolarWinds hack, we've been fairly quiet about it. And I'll tell you, though, this is much bigger than people realize. This is much more costly than the U.S., than I think, including me, people really realize. So the sanctions are good. It was the right thing to do. I commend the administration. Where I have a real concern is Nord Stream 2, which is a pipeline that Russia is building to Germany to basically keep Europe on Russian energy. We passed sanctions in the House. They were actually my sanctions. We passed them in the House and mandated by Congress, and the administration has yet to implement them. And it's essential we do it because this pipeline is 95% complete. So I'm concerned about that.
When did you pass the sanctions? It was the last administration, right? Or was it this administration?
Yeah, it was in December under the NDAA last year.
So the very end of the Trump administration.
Yes.
And so the Biden administration hasn't told you when they're going to follow this requirement from Congress?
No, I had a conversation in a hearing with Secretary Blinken. He claims they're looking at it. They're going back and forth. One agency recommended going ahead and sanctioning the company that is basically honchoing this, overseeing it, and the State Department pushed back. So we think it's a broader part of their negotiations with Germany. Germany wants the pipeline. But most of Europe doesn't, including our allies in Eastern Europe that have lived under the thumb of, you know, Russia for so long.
And I want to completely shift gears here because we could use a little break. We're going to go back to the police talk, certainly in the next few minutes. But you've got legislation to increase the I&M Canal Resort area or something like that. I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by the I&M Canal and the impact it had on Chicago, you know, turned it into a city, really. I don't think a lot of Chicagoans realize that. I certainly didn't until I started mm-hmm. reading it. But tell me a little bit about that and the I&M Canal.
Yeah, so it's an amazing thing. I run on it whenever I'm home, you know, almost every time the weather's good. I took my wife, who's, you know, recently moved into Illinois, and I showed her all the history of it. You know, this was built in basically the kind of early to mid-1800s. It went out of vogue when the trains came in, but it played a very important role in terms of moving people and products up to Chicago, and it's the reason Chicago is what it is today. So it's a great, amazing heritage area with a lot of history, and this would extend that being a heritage area, I think, 15 years into 2035, because that authorization expires in October. So I would encourage anybody, if you're looking for something to do, whether you live near it or not, find a way to get on the I&M Canal and take a afternoon walk or take your bike there. And you'll see a lot of history.
And read a little bit about it before you do, because Chicago was far secondary to St. Louis before this canal was built. I think there were only 4,000 or 5,000 people living in Chicago, and it created the city. I mean, it made it a boomtown.
It did, and you see, like, the cool, you know, locks and stuff and how they used to work, and the lock keepers' houses are still up, and there's a lot of amazing, amazing history. I'd actually, you know, wish someday we can put more money into the preservation of it, but you'll see the, you know, the path where the mules would pull the boats up and down, and people would go out for a day to get up to Chicago from maybe, you know, Ottawa, Illinois, and,
yeah,
and make a day of it.
Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, always great to talk to you, Congressman.
You too, my friend. Thank you.
We're going to talk to Alderman Scott Wagesback about the Adam Toledo video coming up. But first, ahead into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.